The more things change. And when it comes to real estate, two things are changing big time as we are here in the midst of this winter, the housing market and consumer expectations. When it comes to the market, Crisendal Real Estate is seeing more homes for sale, but they're not selling as fast. And experts are seeing higher interest rates on the horizon. As for consumers, it's convenience. We all want to save time and order with the click of the button. Well, that's why Crisendal Real Estate created its hugely successful guaranteed offer program. They have motivated buyers because everybody knows their name. In fact, every single time they market themselves, they're actually helping you sell your home, which is why they feel 100% confident guaranteeing offers. Thousands of people have received guaranteed offers from Crisendal Real Estate because it's the most convenient way to sell, period. More flexibility, more options, more access to homes to buy. So don't wait. Whether you want to sell conventionally or go the guaranteed offer route, call Crisendal Real Estate today at 763-401-SOLD or go to chrislindahl.com. That's chrislindahl.com. Welcome back to Worst Seats in the House. Michael Russo, Anthony LaPanta coming to you from the...
Lovely start with a moan.
From the kitchen of the LaPanta household. Margo just came over and moved the roses because she said it didn't fit my mood. And I was like, when has roses ever fit my mood?
Never, but we were trying to provide a little bit of balance for
ambience.
You. Not ambiance. We were trying to provide balance, happiness, general positivity.
Yeah, thanks. Actually, it really smells nice in here, better than the last time I was here, the day after the fish fry or whatever you had.
The Feast of Seven Fishes.
Yep. Ooh, that's a good one. So let's see, what flavor is this? Bourbon pear. Hopefully my sister-in-law isn't listening. She gets all upset with candles and how toxic they are, apparently, and all this stuff.
These are non-toxic.
Okay, cool. Busy day down at Tria Raenca. The Wild were making so much move, I half expected a trade for a number one center, Anthony.
It was a busy day.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. I mean, Marco Rossi, as the lead of my story happens, it's funny, when teams are going well, nothing ever happens. When teams are in the shitter, a lot of stuff happens, and today everything seemed to happen. Marco Rossi, Matt Boldy come on up. Victor Rask placed on waivers. They sign another third goalie because Andrew Hammond is here. I don't know if that has any indication of Cam Talbot's severity of his injury or if Derek Barabo is going to be out for a while down in Iowa. Jonas Brodin comes back, and then at the end of practice, Nick Bjugstad seems to suffer a really serious injury when he was slashed accidentally by Matt Zuccarello. So where to begin? Let's start with Marco Rossi and Matt Boldy. It's exciting.
Yeah, it is exciting. I think that's the big story, and it's a much-anticipated debut for those two guys. Both of them will play in Boston to make their NHL debuts. A couple guys that are 20 years old, that it feels like the anticipation for these two guys is as high as for any Wild prospect that I can ever remember. And it appears with good reason. They both dominated in the American Hockey League this year. And even though it comes at a time where, I thought Dean Evason's answers today were interesting, where he said, look, I mean, there's obviously a need in the NHL right now, but these guys wouldn't be here if we didn't think they were ready. So I think it's that combination. It's they're ready. The team has some injuries and is skidding a bit right now, so why not give them a shot and take a look at it? And I think it's fans are excited about it. I mean, this is a big moment for the Minnesota Wild, not just the game in Boston, but these next four or five games to see how close to ready these two guys are.
No doubt. It was interesting, like, you know, in the Dean contradicted himself a couple times because he was making it very clear that there's not like let's take the pressure off these guys. They're, you know, they can't, we're not expecting them to bring us to the promised land is the term he said. But then on the other hand, he basically said they're here to provide much needed energy to a team that really needs it right now because of injuries, because of losses, because our quote power play sucks. I mean, you know, it's like, he doesn't want them to feel the pressure of having to go out there and be saviors, but yet they are here to contribute.
He mixed
which is
a lot of his quotes there. Those came from like four different answers. Yeah. They, I mean, they're all accurate.
Well, no, but that's my point, is that, you know, that he basically kind of in every breath changed his tune. And I think a lot of it is because they are here to help.
They are. And I think that was the theme that I took was that, look, we're not trying to hide the fact that this team needs help right now.
Right.
And part of it's due to injuries. I mean, the energy level hasn't been the same the last couple of games. And a part of that is you take away guys that provide so much of that. Eriksson Ek, Greenway, Foligno line has done it all year long. And without Eriksson Ek, they haven't been together. Then you couple that with Jared Spurgeon and Jonas Brodin, who, because of their efficiency defensively, mean you don't have to spend very much time in your own zone. There's so much less stress on the rest of the club when those guys are in the lineup. So you take those guys out, and then, I mean, look, these guys probably overachieved for the first 25 games of the year, and there was going to be a little bit of a reversion. There were going to be a couple nights where things didn't go quite as smoothly as they had prior to that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think all of those things combined. And then these two guys were dominating in the American Hockey League. And Bill Guerin had made the comment last week. We talked about it on last week's show that said there's a point where each guy proves that he's ready for the next level because he dominates the level where he is. And I think both of those guys did that in the American Hockey League. And that means that it's time. And I love the fact that Dean said, look, our power play has sucked, and these guys are power play guys, so they're both going to be on it. They're not trying to ease these guys into the lineup. Rossi's going to play on a line with Kevin Fiala. Boldy's going to play on a line with Brandon Duhaime and Freddie Gaudreau. And don't be surprised if soon thereafter, if everything works well, that Rossi and Boldy aren't playing together.
Yep, and Rossi is on the number one power play unit, Boldy on the second power play unit with Kevin Fiala. I think Kevin Fiala is probably the happiest person at the rink today besides Marco Rossi and Matt Boldy because he gets a lifeline. He's gotten a short shrift at center ever since he's gotten to Minnesota, it seems like. By the way, next live show at Tuttle's is January 13th. We had a huge crowd there 2 days before the Winter Classic. So January 13th, please come on out and see Anthony and myself for what should be a live show. I think today's news made it a little more perplexing to me, and I brought this up on the last live show, that Marco Rossi wasn't called up for the Winter Classic. I mean, Victor Rask is not part of the future of this franchise. He was placed on waivers today, not just to get cap space and roster space. It's because he stinks. He's been playing terrible. And you lose Joel Eriksson Ek. Right away, you watch this team lately, and you really see their lack of depth at center when you don't have an Eriksson Ek in there. And to not bring Rossi up there, like, I don't blame them for Boldy, because Boldy had played one game after another lower body injury, and you don't want to throw him on that type of situation on that rink and risk his health. But to not have Rossi up for that game, I just thought made no sense. It's like, especially since you're throwing him a bone, here today by bringing him up. I just thought that they should have done that 2 games ago. And also, given the fans that froze their ass off in the stands, something to be excited about as well.
Yeah, I don't necessarily agree with you. I mean, I it would have been great. It would have been fun to see him. I think it's kind of nice to have that and all of the hoopla around that game be in the rearview mirror, and now these guys can just focus on playing hockey. I think that's a tough spot to ask a guy to make his NHL debut.
I'm sure that's probably what Bill Guerin was thinking as well.
Probably. And then on top of it, look, I mean, they thought all week that they were going to have Jonas Brodin in that game. And I know those guys don't play the same position, but it changes that team dramatically. When you throw Kalen Addison in there in place of Jonas Brodin, when you're already missing Jared Spurgeon, that was a game that was going to be as difficult as any the Wild have played this season for them to win.
Yep.
A Blues team that's been playing really well lately, with all of the extras on the side, all of the
got
other
all their
distractions.
COVID guys back.
Right. Everybody except Braden Schenn was back in that game, and Minnesota's without so many key pieces, that game was going to be a handful for them to win. I think it's better to have these guys make their NHL debut the game after that. And not to mention the fact that there's also, even though, yes, I agree with you, Victor Rask is no part of the future of this team. And even if he does come back and play more this year, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about like the future beyond 2022. But there is something to be said for giving veteran guys the opportunity to play in that game. Say what you want about Rask. I mean, he has been here for 3 years. He's been a part of the organization. really hasn't done anything to embarrass himself or to embarrass the team or anything else. I mean, he's been a solid pro. He's handled it well when he's been benched. He's come back and usually provided a spark. And I'm not saying the guy deserves to be an all-star or have his jersey hanging from the rafters or anything, but I do think there's a little bit of a, you know what, let's give the veteran guys the chance to play in this game.
I don't disagree. I'm sure that went into Dean's thinking. I mean, Dean is a respectful guy from that standpoint, right. And obviously the organization values him and respects him. So Boldy and Rossi will make their NHL debut in Boston a lot.
We were watching the scrimmage today at practice.
Yeah. By the way, I'm watching this Boston game right now, and first of all, what an awful goal by Blackwood. But second of all, I mean, they are flying right now, so the Wild better buckle up for that game on Thursday. But man,
I wanted to talk about the scrimmage a little bit today, the simulated game. Yep. They played for 20 minutes, and it was, we've talked about it all season long about the challenges that Kevin Fiala has faced with who have been his line mates.
Mm-hmm.
And today it was a practice scrimmage, but he's playing with Foligno and Marco Rossi, and all of a sudden there are about three plays in the first two or three shifts where a pass is right in the wheelhouse for Fiala. Yeah. For a one-timer. It's on his tape. He doesn't have to try and pull it out of his skates to get a shot. He doesn't have to try to beat two guys one-on-two through the zone to create a chance. I turned to Wes Walls as we were watching the game, and I said, Fiala has to be in absolute heaven right now. Yeah. And now, we don't know if Rossi's going to be able to do this in Boston on Thursday night or against the Capitals here on Saturday, but even just the ability to make plays in those kind of settings has to have guys excited.
Talk about a quick hello, you're welcome to the NHL. Here's Alex Ovechkin and Patrice Bergeron.
Right.
Back-to-back games. But similarly, what you just said, how about the first shift of the game, what Boldy did to create the Rem Pivot goal? Like, it's like...
He's got some tremendous little close-range, quick-twitch stick skills that lead me to believe he's going to be a special player.
Exactly. So to get back to what I was saying, I mean, we assume they're playing Thursday in Boston. The one thing I've learned in this ever-changing world is who knows what happens tomorrow, right? But it's going to be a really neat thing. First of all, you know, as Marco Rossi said, his parents were in Iowa on January 1st, fly all the way back to Austria, then they repack and come back, which is kind of funny. Funny probably for us, probably not as much for, I mean, the Rossis I'm sure don't mind right now, but it's just like, okay, let's go get another COVID test and come on back. So that'll be really cool. Also, this happens, and we didn't make a big deal of it today because Marco really wants to get this myocarditis incident that he had last year out of his head. So he really doesn't want to talk about it anymore. But this is 1 year to the day that he is getting called up, that he was diagnosed with myocarditis. Pretty special. I think it kind of completes the journey. Then from Boldy's standpoint, born 30 minutes from Boston, played 30 miles from Boston, played 5 miles away on campus at Boston College, now is going to make his NHL debut in his hometown. That's one thing I want to figure out is how many Massachusetts away guys have made their NHL debuts in Boston. That'd be a good little tidbit. Mom, dad, stepmom, stepbrothers, half-brothers, half-sisters, his grandmother, all these people coming, friends, family. It's going to be absolutely awesome. I talked to his dad today. His dad's a cop. By the way, much thicker Boston accent than Matt Boldy has for some reason. And it's just going to be, I think, just a really, really neat story. And it really reminds me of, even though it wasn't Ryan Donato's first game in Boston, when I was there last time in Boston, it was Ryan Donato's first game as a visitor in Boston. And I went to this suite that Ted Donato and his whole family was in, and I did this big, giant story on them. And I'm going to get to do the same thing in a couple days, hang out with the Rossis, hang out with the Boldys. They're unfortunately not going to get to see their kids because of the new protocols where players aren't allowed to leave the hotels. Families can't come down after the game. So the Rossis are technically going to fly in from Austria and not even get to see Marco. But it's good. I think it's just going to be really special for both these families.
Well, no question about it. Now, go back. Let's start with the Boldy thing. I mean, we've seen it. We also saw it throughout Charlie Coyle's career.
Yep.
That there's a passion among Boston area and Massachusetts natives, similar to what you see from Minnesota people with how provincial they are, how proud they are of their own. And that's, it'll be fun to see. I mean, every time the Wild played in Boston, if Charlie Coyle did anything, you'd hear a pretty decent roar in mm-hmm. the building, even though they are as passionate for the Bruins as any home crowd that we see in the league.
Remember Charlie's first game there? The Coyles rented a bus and brought, like, I think it was a couple buses, like a school bus.
They had about a section full of Coyle fans in the crowd. And I don't have any idea how tight or how deep Boldy's ties are in the city, but I got to believe they're similar. And
well, that's the one thing. You know, it's going to be really neat, too. And I talked about this with Boldy on a recent podcast. But Boldy, a lot of these Bruins guys, he knows well because, these Boston, just like Minnesota, these Boston players, local players and Bruins players skate together in the offseason. I think Charlie McAvoy and him are really tight and things like that. So it's going to be really cool to see that. That's going to be, I just think, absolutely awesome. Let's talk about the Winter Classic. Obviously, disappointing outcome. Incredible work by the NHL to put that on. Incredible work by the fans to sit through that in frigid temperatures, not leave even when the Wild were getting destroyed. All of a sudden, the Wild come back in that game, and the people come out of the bathrooms and the corridors and sit back.
That actually
in their
was
seats.
The most amazing part of all of it to me was at the second intermission when it was 6-2, and the crowd thins considerably as people go visit the concession stands and everything. But when the third period was about to start and I looked around, I expected it to be a third full. It was still two-thirds full at least, and then some. And I mean, they were and dancing around and jumping around. I mean, it was funny having conversations with people that weren't from Minnesota. Like earlier in the day, I did the game for Sports USA Radio, and our producer is a guy from Chicago. Their company's offices are in LA. Yeah, how many fans you think will actually come today? I was like, actually come? There won't be an empty seat in the place. I mean, are you nuts? This is the Minnesota people will embrace this. They'll be proud of the fact that at minus 10, they're out here jumping up and down, drinking beers, watching a hockey game.
You know what I found interesting watching the Green Bay Viking game a couple days ago and seeing all those fans there? And I know it was technically 22 degrees
warmer
hotter because it was 12, and I know 12 and minus 10 is a difference. But we never ever hear of a cold market outdoor frigid football game of like, are they going to cancel the game? I don't know why it was such a big narrative going into this game that like, is the NHL going to move this game? I mean, it just never made much sense.
I never heard many people talking about that.
And as you know, Twitter is how you measure things.
Exactly.
But I was getting constantly asked questions on this. And I will say this. I mean, the league was worried. They had a lot of conference calls with doctors, with Gary Bettman was on these calls. I know that people inside the Wild were starting to get a little concerned that they might try to figure out a way to push the game back and things like that. And it never seemed to happen. But really, kudos to the fans for coming back out there. But I thought Steve Mayer and Chi-Chi and Rachel Siegel and all these people that I wrote about that put this game on just did a magnificent job. They spent, I mean, it's about $10 million to put this thing on for one game. I mean, it's crazy when you think of all the effort that goes into making that field look as incredible as it did. And I just thought it was absolutely spectacular and totally nonsensical and counterproductive by the league to have six games going up against it. That was absolutely
that
stupid.
That made no sense
to
me.
How do you spend $10 million on a game and then have six games going up against
it? Yeah, well, there was only one that was simultaneous, but there were a bunch of other games during the day, which was crazy. I mean, it used to be the only game in the league on New Year's Day. Sometimes there'd be like a 9 o'clock West Coast game in Vancouver or something, but long since over would be the Winter Classic. And it was crazy when I looked at the schedule that morning. I'm shocked there are these other games, but I thought the presentation was terrific. How cool was it when you looked out there halfway through the second period and on two of the pond sheets, there were just pond hockey games going on.
Yeah.
I mean, during the NHL games going on 75 feet to your left, and there's just people out there playing pond hockey. Yeah. I mean, that was Minnesota, and I thought they did a great job. And I gotta say, I mean, with most of these events, I've kind of grown tired of them, like watching them in other markets where it doesn't do much for me, but all you have to be is around it one time when it's in your own hometown and you realize just what it means to that community and how special it is.
Yep.
And that makes it all worthwhile. And, you know, because the games themselves oftentimes they're not the cleanest played games. In fact, I didn't think this one was. It was clear the puck was hard as a rock and was bouncing all over the place. And I, you know, maybe that's something they have to adjust in the future to find a way to.
Well, part of the issue that I heard is that the microchips in the pucks, that they were all frozen up and everything. And that was creating a bit of an issue and making it almost heavier and all that. That was one of the
could be. It seemed like they were bouncy. And, you know, I know we talked about the fact that they were going to have to warm the ice to get it to optimum playing temperature. And maybe it was something where the, you know, the pucks were too cold or too frozen. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I mean, I know the one thing they did is they still keep those pucks in a freezer because they only need to regulate it, because if you kept it out, it would be too cold. So they were hoping to keep it at the right temperature, which I believe is 14 degrees for a regular season hockey game. I just thought that they did a really good job. It was TNT's first ever presentation of the Winter Classic, and it tied with the most watched NHL regular season game on cable of all time, averaging 1.4 million viewers.
I didn't watch any of their broadcasts. Did you go back and watch any of it? I haven't gone back and watched it.
You know, we had it on in the press box, and there was some volume, but it was distracting just because there was such a delay. Now I know what Wild fans feel like when they say that I'm ruining goals for them by Twitter and the delay when they're watching you on Bally's.
But Margo's told me that I can't post things like at the end of a game. I have to wait 20 seconds or something because she said otherwise I don't know that the game's over yet.
I heard that it was really good. I heard the studio show is a little kind of, you know, hit and miss. I mean, I'm sure it probably would have been much better if it was on site in Minnesota instead of Atlanta, but I heard that the actual like in-game broadcast was really, really good. So, that's pretty cool. Let's talk about the game though a little bit. Anthony, obviously they didn't play well. I think part of it was expected because of the injuries. Part of it was expected because it was their first game in 12 days. But man, it was disappointing to watch them play in the first period. Get fortunate to get out of that game tied because of a fluky goal that scored by Kaprizov. They survive it. You think that they're going to adjust in the second period, and they were god awful in the second.
Second period might have been their worst period of the year.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't think of one that was worse. And St. Louis played well. There's no question about that. But I thought Minnesota's attention to detail in their own zone was terrible.
Yeah.
And the guys are missing. We've talked about that enough. It doesn't matter who you're missing. Mm-hmm. That's not the way the Wild play. And the way they took care of the puck was subpar. Actually, they were fortunate to get out of that period only down 6-2. Yeah. I mean, it could have been 8-2.
Yeah.
And It was disappointing, and I thought, but what I loved is what I've loved about this team all year is they came out and battled then in the third period, made it 6-4,
pulled within one or tied it.
Easily could have, and the fact that in that game, it was a little bit of a, here's the way the Wild play lesson to fans all across the country. Down by three, well, we'll just pull the goalie with 8 minutes and 19 seconds left in the game. I mean, the Wild, I believe, and I'm going to look it up before our broadcast on Saturday, I believe they've played more minutes 6-on-5 than any team in the league. Mm-hmm. And yet they're 9 games over .500. It isn't because they're behind all the time. It's because when they're behind, they say, well, what the hell? Let's pull the goalie right now and get after it. And so to have them battle back, get it to 6-4, play like that in the third period, then I thought the comments after the game were terrific. Matt Zuccarello saying it was embarrassing to come out here and play the way we did when fans were willing to brave the cold, and then we come out here and play like that. I mean, that's the personality of this team, is that they take responsibility for those things. They battled till the finish, but nobody was making excuses. Well, we didn't have this guy, we didn't have that guy, the puck was bouncing or anything else. That wasn't good enough.
Zuccarello had fire in his eyes when he was talking to us after that game.
Yeah.
And by the way, we only got him because Talbot was hurt. We originally asked for Talbot, and then they told us Talbot was injured. Give us somebody else. And I'm like, Zuccarello.
But talking to some of the other guys in the last couple of days, they've all said the same thing. Basically, I mean, that is just the mindset of this team. And Billy Guerin coming out and just saying, well, that's what you do. If guys get hurt, you play with who you have.
Yep.
I mean, that's the personality of this team. I thought that was the only thing I enjoyed, the fact that that was a part of the Winter Classic.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Zuccarello had a couple good lines, too. He said that the coldest he's ever been in his life was coming out for the third period down 6-2. That was his point, though, that they were, you know, down 4, and that's why he was cold. And even, you know, Dean Evason said yesterday, he goes, he bets that, that he said it was a miserable experience behind the bench with the heaters and everything. He said, but he goes, I bet Chief, meaning Craig Berube, was a lot less cold than the Wild coaching staff. And again, the connotation being that the Wild were playing like crap. Thanks to Chris Lindahl Real Estate, as always, for sponsoring this podcast. And we're here at the start of a new year. If you have any new projects on your list for 2022, maybe your furnace, is it running efficiently? Are you getting cold or warm spots in your house? Well, we still have a long winter ahead of us here in Minnesota, only about 4 or 5 months left of winter here, Anthony. Well, make sure you are prepared and get your furnace inspected. My friends over at Aquarius Home Services are offering $55 furnace tune-ups, which includes 21-point efficiency inspection. One of their trusted local heating experts will come to your home, give a thorough inspection, and review all of the details with you that will give you peace of mind. Aquarius strives on earning the right to be recommended. Get a company you can trust. They're just a click away at AquariusHomeServices.com. And don't forget to mention that Russo sent you. Here's a word from Bosch Law Firm.
Hey, everyone. Attorney Jerry Bosch here with Bosch Law Firm and WorkCompExperts.com. For almost 30 years, we've represented Minnesotans just like you all over the great state of Minnesota to guarantee they've been treated fairly and with respect when they've suffered a work-related injury. A work injury can change your life in an instant. You need someone on your side who can help you focus on getting back on your feet and getting paid while you do. You may be entitled to medical benefits, wage loss benefits, job placement, retraining, and payment for permanent disability. To make sure you are being paid all the work comp benefits you're entitled to, please call the attorneys at Bosch Law Firm. The call is always free, and there's never a fee unless we recover benefits on your behalf. Call 651-333-8300, Bosch Law Firm, or visit us at workcompexperts.com.
Another of our fine sponsors is Trio Orthopedic, and this is the place to go. Whether you're an athlete trying to get yourself back on the field or the court or the rink, or if you're just an active adult that's trying to make sure you maximize whatever time you have and the how active you can be in everyday life, I've seen most of the doctors down there over the course of our family's history. AJ was down there for a Tommy John injury. We've had Ariana down there for an ankle injury. I've been in there to see Dr. Amundsen for a disc issue. I've had a ACL reconstructive surgery from Dr. Joel Boyd. Every single one of them has provided a tremendous experience. And you've got a question about some of my...
No, I was going to tell you that I once saw Dr. Pena there because I broke my foot stepping off a curb in New York City.
Yeah, which is close to the same as like ACL, MCL meniscus on a ski slope in Whistler. Maybe about the same. Did they find out you actually had a broken foot, or was
I broke my navicular bone, and Dr. Pena goes to me, he goes, all right, you have two choices. You can have surgery and have no weight bearing for 6 months, or just deal with it. I'm like, I'll deal with it.
Nice. Well, anyway, go visit Trio Orthopedic if you've got any of these kind of issues. They're the best in the business for a reason, and they'll make sure you get back on the field quickly.
Yeah, the navicular bone, no blood supply gets to it, so it's the only way to operate.
I've never heard of the navicular bone.
Yeah, you have it in your wrist. Hopefully Pukes didn't break that today. And you have it in your foot, and there's no blood supply that apparently gets to it, so it doesn't heal on its own. So the only way to fix it is surgery. And hopefully I'm getting all this right, because all the doctors out there will tell me if I'm wrong. But I'm pretty sure that's what I was told.
Just, if you need medical advice, come to the Worst Seats in the House podcast.
I said to Dr. Pena at the time, he goes, all right, just picture this. The sports writer that pretty much everybody in that room despises is going to go in there for 6 months on one of those caddies, you know, like those like wheel up to a player and be like, hey, can I interview right now? My little caddy, not going to work. So
it could have been just a few.
Yeah, just a couple. Next live show is at Tuttle's January 13th. Just to show you how much things changed, last live show I made the joke that as long as Anthony and I got out of Edmonton without COVID, well, we're not going to Edmonton now, so we'll definitely be at that live show on January 13th. So definitely come on down. We haven't really talked about Victor Rask today. Now, again, waivers, I think people sometimes get confused by waivers in the NHL because it's different than every other sport. Waivers don't mean you're waived. They didn't cut him loose. Guaranteed contracts in the NHL. Victor Rask is still on this team. the waivers, what that means is now if he clears waivers on Wednesday, he could be sent to the minors. He can be sent to the taxi squad. He'll still get his full $4 million prorated, obviously, for what he hasn't been paid this year. The Wild will get $1.125 million in cap relief. They don't necessarily have to send him to Iowa. They don't necessarily have to even send him to the taxi squad. Right now, if Bukestad hurt, you know, right now they only have Rem Pitlick and Victor Rask as extras in the lineup. So one of those two are going to probably play in Boston unless they call somebody else up.
But once he clears waivers, they have the freedom to make that move.
Exactly. But he can stay on the lineup.
Absolutely can. So, and he wouldn't be the first guy that's happened to.
I mean, in fact,
I think it's happened to him before. Yeah, he was on waivers and wound up, somebody got hurt or scratched or something that night, and he ended up having to stay and go play in the lineup.
I don't think they've ever put him on waivers before. That one I would definitely remember. But it's been somebody else. Maybe he was going to be, I think what it was is that he was going to be a healthy scratch that night and then wound up playing. That actually happened this year.
Yeah, that happened this year. But there was a game either the night before we had found out they were going to put him on waivers. I thought they had actually put him on waivers.
Yeah, no, he's
and then that next day somebody got hurt or showed up sick or something like that, and he wound up playing.
You know
that
what
night.
Was interesting today is that so he got put on waivers at 1 o'clock. That's the new waiver time. It used to be 11 a.m. What's funny is Bukestad got hurt about 12:35, and I wonder if the Wild ever considered pulling him off waivers, because I think you could have plucked him back off just because if Bukestad, but maybe this is also a sign that Bukestad's injury isn't serious, or they didn't think about it, or whatever it is.
But I actually think it's more an indication that, you know what, if somebody were to claim Victor Rask, so be it. But right now, we want to give some of these minutes to Marco Rossi, Matt Boldy, Connor Dewar, and when Erickson Ek and Greenway come back, the odds of Victor Rask being in the top 12 are slim. That's what I think it is. I think it's more just that if we've got a limited number of minutes to give out, we think it's time to give them to some other players.
I've got multiple sources that say the Wild have tried to trade Rask pretty much all year, willing to retain salary, everything, no buyers. So I'd be shocked if he's claimed tomorrow. Especially, I mean, if you're going to claim him, you'd probably let him fly through and then go call Bill Guerin up and say, let me make a trade with you. But you retain more money, because my point is that if you take him off waivers, you're going to wind up paying him much more and have more on the cap hit than if you had made
which
a trade.
And it might be attractive to Guerin, because even if he pays half of the remaining salary, it could be a little bit more than what their cap savings are. And so there might be a deal out there to be made.
So, but I think it'd be really, really tough. But that's potentially there. But, you know, this was just, it felt like just a matter of time that they finally did it. And it obviously happened today. The other thing that happened today is Zane McIntyre signed to a two-way contract, former University of North Dakota Mike Richter Award winner as the best goalie in Division I hockey many, many years ago. He's 29 years old, was a star at Thief River Falls, has had a great AHL career, has played 8 NHL games, coincidentally made his NHL debut against the Wild here in Minnesota, and he is signed. And the big question here, Anthony, is does that assign that Cam Talbot's going to be out for a while, or is it just a sign that they know that Andrew Hammond is going to be here regardless because he'll be on the taxi squad, so they need somebody else down in Iowa? Either way, they get a little more goaltending depth today.
Could be both, but I think the fact I'm worried that it indicates that Cam Talbot might be a little bit longer than just day to day. That's 100% a guess. I have absolutely no inside information with that. The other thing is that their schedule is still so light. In Boston on Thursday, Washington here Saturday, then the next trip canceled. So, I mean, you're going to be talking about a team that between, January 20th and December 20th and January 14th, they play 4 games, right? Or 3 games, actually.
Yeah.
The Winter Classic and then these two, Boston and Washington. I mean, you've got a chance. So with all of the disadvantages that it's created that we've talked about and some of the bad luck they had pre-Christmas where instead of playing a team that was shorthanded, the game got postponed, and then that team wound up losing to somebody else the next night with about 16 guys in their lineup. In this case, it might be coming at a good time for Minnesota with all these guys beat up to play this few games during this stretch, and hopefully when these games are rescheduled, even though it might create a bottleneck in the schedule where you're cramming a lot of games into a short period of time, with a healthy lineup might be better than right now going through this grind trying to snap out of a losing streak with some of the guys that they're still missing.
And that is definitely
including Cam Talbot.
That's definitely the glass half full way to look at it. And Bill Guerin brought that up the other day, is that right now, if there is a blessing in disguise here, it's that they've had so many games postponed. You know, maybe
you want me to go get the roses and put them back by you over here?
Maybe this will help, Spurgeon and Erickson Ek. At a minimum, they're not going to miss nearly as many games as they would have. So, in a lot of ways that'll help. I still think that the way the league is deciding what teams play and what don't is just
bizarre.
So curious. I mean, like Montreal the other day plays completely shorthanded.
It's bizarre with the fact that the Canadian teams they're playing their road games, but the fact that they're playing some of their home games is crazy to me.
Yeah.
And the fact that you start to,
The Wild not in Ottawa yesterday?
There is no fair way to describe. And so let's even say that they just said, all Canadian teams, you don't have to play any home games right now because all your provinces are saying you can't have full fans in attendance. Even that wouldn't be right. I mean, I don't understand why that is so different. Then let's think back to last year, where as we're going through the COVID times, or even 2 years ago, where it was some cities were allowing more fans than others. I mean, think of the Wild playoff series. In Vegas, they're allowing a full house.
Yeah.
Minnesota was allowing 2,000 fans.
Yeah.
Well, they didn't say, well, wait a minute, let's postpone the games in Minnesota until Minnesota can also have a full house.
Exactly.
I mean, there was not only dollars involved, but there were also home ice advantages involved. So when you go to these teams and say, I mean, I'm gonna make this an exaggerated point to prove a point. What if all of a sudden you said, you know what? It's going to be really cold in Minnesota, so we don't think as many fans are going to come to the game. So we'd like to postpone this one until April, where it's warmer and more people are willing to come.
Yeah.
What's to stop a team when all of a sudden you got a couple star guys out and say, you know what, we don't want to play tonight because we can only have 6,000 fans or 2,000 fans or whatever the number is. I mean, I just don't think it's fair to start arbitrarily deciding that some games are going to be canceled and others are not. Either cancel them all and make it a black and white rule, or cancel none of them and say everybody's just got to deal with it.
The positivity rate on COVID right now is off the charts in both countries. Why does the league think in a month suddenly that these games are going to have fans in Canada? Canada has proven in the last couple of years that they are going to be absolutely cracking down with these restrictions. You think in a month that they were going to have fans? They're like, I don't understand why.
They might get worse in a month.
Exactly.
They might all of a sudden say American teams can't fly in.
This was so nonsensical. Like, I still don't understand why the Wild didn't go there December 27th to Winnipeg. They had a full house. The Wild were going to get tested that morning and come back that night.
You're right.
It made no sense.
The only thing I'd say about that day is they canceled all the games in the league.
Well, exactly,
it didn't make any sense, but at least they across the board just said.
But yet then they played a slate of games on the 28th. So it just was,
later,
what was the reasoning? It just made no sense to me.
Yeah, I mean.
And I get we don't have all the information on what goes on in that league office and all that stuff. But this, to me, is not going to get better. And now the Wild are the ones, again, that's going to get screwed from this. And it's just bizarre.
Well, because now you look at, let's say you start to reschedule the games. And it's going to happen in a variety of different possible ways. One is you extend the regular season by a week or two, but it can't be much more than that because
we have a Europe trip.
Well, that's exactly right. Although they're going to screw up a cruise trip, and I think you had some vacation plans in February too. But so let's say they add a week to the end of the regular season. Well, not every team has the same number of games to make up. So now even start to plug them in the break in February. Well, I mean, if one team has all of a sudden got to fit 8 games and the other team has 2, well, that's not going to be equitable. I mean, even look at what the Wild are dealing with right now. I mean, they play the Blues. Well, the Blues had a game 3 nights earlier. The Wild hadn't played in 11 days. I mean, that's a huge difference. And so now start to go into that month of February where all the Canadian teams are going to be, they're going to have basically a regular schedule because they've all had so many games canceled. But for a lot of these other teams, I haven't looked specifically at how many different teams have had canceled, but I know they're not even close to the same. And so you start to, let's say you got one team that's got to fit 2 games in there. What are you going to do? Have them play 2 and then take 2.5 weeks off? And another team gets 4 days off or 6 days off or whatever.
A lot of teams have had like as many as the Wild. By the way, I'm looking at the weather tomorrow. Ooh, boy, in Boston. Hopefully I get home. But a lot of teams like Colorado's played like the fewest games in the league, I think. But that's all because they had the COVID outbreak. Like, Wild are the only ones that have been affected by them just existing. It's just, I don't know. It's just, it's so strange to me that they're doing this. By the way, you remember the Seinfeld episode where it was the, where George, it was the Alcoholics Anonymous episode with James Spader, where he was going around and doing the whole 12-step thing and
apologizing to everybody.
George was upset that he didn't get an apology, and James Spader's like, "I'm sorry that your big bulbous head, you know, like stretch my sweater or whatever."
Yep.
I keep on looking at my reflection in your window, and God, do I have a big head! Like this. This toque does not look good.
Yeah, I mean, there have been some people who have said that for years.
Yeah. Funny. But physically, I have a...
Well, you have a hat on.
I know, but it just looks so big.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I don't think it's as big as it looks in the...
I don't know.
Well, you've got your hat folded over, and it's a... Well, plus it's about 93 in our house, so I'm not sure why you're wearing a winter hat.
Yeah, you guys don't need Aquarius Home Services to come over here. Super hot.
We need somebody.
Remember that time my mom was here having dinner? She was like in a full-on sweat.
Well, we actually are having issues with our fireplace, and we've got a guy coming to service it. He showed up one day. We have a gas fireplace, and it works sporadically, which is probably even more frustrating than it just not working at all, because sometimes you'll turn it on and off for 3, 4, 5 days in a row and it'll be fine. Then other days it just decides when it wants to shut off on its own. Well, coincidentally, so we have this guy scheduled, which was like a month out, and I get the fire turned on that morning to try to warm up the house for the rest of the family, and it works. Well, the guy just like out of the blue says, "Hey, I'm in the neighborhood. I'm going to come by," and then shows up and comes in and says, "Well, I can't work on it now. It's hot." And because, I mean, out of all the days that it had been sitting, it had been sitting unused for probably 2 weeks. And that day we happened to turn it on and he showed up. So we're still waiting till February, but it was on earlier today. And I was standing in my kitchen about ready to eat dinner and like started to feel sweat rolling down my face. I was like, I think we can probably turn the fire off now.
Yeah. Stanley misses it though. That's my favorite thing, is seeing your videos of Stanley just right next to the fireplace.
And staring at
just,
it.
Yeah. Dying. Can't
absolutely
breathe.
Absolutely mesmerized by the flame.
It's just crazy. Again, January 13th is the next live show at Tuttle's. What do you want to talk about now, Anthony? Anything in particular before we go to Twitter questions?
Well, I think the other thing that we should talk about is just the team in general at this point. And because I know you talked about the fact that you said right off the top, like, you know, look, the days that are when the team is headed the wrong direction are the days where things are most exciting or most interesting because the most things are happening. But I think what can't be lost here in all of this is just step back and look at the big picture of where the club is. And there are still a lot of reasons to be excited about it. And I think if you start to infuse the young talent into this, that blessing in disguise or silver lining might be one way to look at it. Like if all of this, some struggles, some injuries, open the door for these guys, and all of a sudden, let's just say they work out. Let's say Boldy and Rossi prove that they're ready to be in the NHL and belong here. Now, all of a sudden, you might have something with this club moving forward.
Yeah. I agree. I still
but
think
the
this
goaltending
is
the big question.
Yeah. I've covered the league long enough to know that this is not a permanent thing. I mean, they're going to be back. They're going to go back and forth,
well,
especially with no games next week.
They might, but what if they come up? Let's just say they come up and they both look brilliant in Boston and Washington.
Yeah.
And I mean, I do think this team has played well enough right now. We've talked about it a lot from Billy Guerin's perspective in terms of a trade. You're not going to look Dean Evason in the eye and say, all right, these guys each scored a couple goals in these games, but now that Eriksson Ek's back, we're going to send those guys to the minors and just try to tough it. That's not going to happen.
I don't know. I don't agree. I mean, Beckman had 4 goals in the preseason and had no shot of making the team.
But preseason's different than regular season.
And are still
Rossi
young
and Boldy,
20-somethings.
Right, but Rossi and Boldy are different than Beckman. Yeah. These were your first-round picks in back-to-back years. And I just think if they look the part when they're up here, I don't think you can look your coach in the eye, the other guys in the room in the eye, or the fans in the eye and say, you know what, we're going to keep playing with guys like Rem Pitlick or Freddie Gaudreau or any of these guys. If we've got guys that look like they can be difference makers, I don't think you send them back to Iowa.
I disagree. I think that I've covered the league long enough. Contracts rule the roost.
They do.
You know, I mean, this cap squeeze in the next 3 years is absolutely real. That doesn't change things with Rossi. Rossi, I mean, that contract, if he plays 10 games, will hamstring this organization. And when you got to, if all of a sudden you have Boldy and Rossi absolutely erupt here, I mean, you're not going to be able to afford
it. It's a
them.
Ridiculous question to ask, but I mean, let's just say 8 games in, Marco Rossi is playing every night. He's on your top power play. Let's say he's got 10 points in 8 games.
Yeah.
You're going to say, you know what? Back to the minors you go.
I'm just telling you. I mean, that's
no. I'm
this
asking
is
your
real.
Opinion.
I mean, I agree that it shouldn't happen. I'm just thinking that, like, I just have covered the league long. I mean, we watched Zucker go back and forth forever. Marco Scandella deserved to be on the team a lot sooner than he was. He went back and forth probably 10 times. You know, that this is just the way that Bill Guerin
no
also
question.
Feels about
right.
these guys.
Contracts are they absolutely rule it. They have to, and GMs have to look at it that way. I just think if you've got a team that's in contention, that your decisions become very different with contracts.
But you have
than
guaranteed contracts and you have salary cap issues. And again, this cap squeeze in the next couple of years, if you have if Boldy and Rossi come up now and they are unbelievable the next 2 years, and you've got to re-sign them at $5-7 million contracts, you can't afford them. So you almost need Rossi to push that down the curb one hair and have him ready to be re-signed when the Parisian suitor buyouts come off the books. Now, I will say, Bill Guerin, to be fair to your point, Bill Guerin keeps on saying that this has nothing to do with anything right now and that this is just, Russo-driven. But look, it's that is reality. And
it's
it makes
reality,
total business
but I also
sense
think
to,
what's reality is Billy has said from the beginning, we're here to win.
Mm-hmm.
We're here to win. Dean Evason is here to win. And I
and yet
think
they trot out Victor Rask in a Winter Classic and every night. I mean, you know, like that's just contracts rule sometimes.
Yeah,
so.
I don't think contracts had anything to do with Victor Rask playing in that game. I believe that if this team stays where they are right now, that and those guys play well. I mean, there's it's a lot of variables. Let's see what happens in the first week first before we start to wonder and start to analyze what the right decision is.
Yep. It's January in Minnesota, and you can count on two things, the bitter cold and quick fix diet plans. Ironically, neither of them last that long. That's why I love Profile. Profile is focused on long-term success. My health coach has given me the tools that I will use the rest of my life. Look, staying healthy is important to me. If it's important to you, please connect with the team at Profile and see how they can help you start the new year off right, especially after this holiday season where you probably binged and ate bad food and all that type of stuff and maybe put on a couple pounds. Well, if you want to get off the new year right, call Profile. Profile worked for me and it could work for you too. Get started today. Visit profileplan.com/Twin Cities for a location near you. That's profileplan.com/Twin Cities. And here's a word from Minnesota Propane Association.
Hi, I'm Laura Shera. And did you know that a propane gas furnace lifespan averages 20 years, while electric heat pumps only last 14 years? And propane furnaces work in all temperatures while delivering warm and consistent heat to your home. Why buy two heating systems when one propane furnace can do it all? It lasts longer, works better, and it costs less. These things and more are done with propane today. The right energy right now.
Well, we binged and put on some extra pounds over the holidays, but it wasn't on bad food. It was on great food. We had so many great meals over the holiday season. And each night, my trip on my way home is to Kowalski's to pick up the supplies for that. In fact, we just did it tonight, even on a casual night. It doesn't have to be a break the bank night. Tonight, I stopped, picked up a couple of their rotisserie chickens. Margot made some chicken soup with it and hit their deli for some lunch meats and bread and wound up with sandwich and soup night. It was terrific. No matter what's on your menu, no matter what the situation, if you're going to have a big night with great guests, if you're just going to have a quick family dinner, Kowalski's is the place to go.
Back here, worst seats in the house, Mike Russo, Anthony LaPanta, final segment of the show. What is Vinny working on back there? He actually looks busy. What do you think he's working on? It's got to be something
quite
sports
certain
related.
I'm quite certain it has nothing to do with a job of any kind.
Yeah, definitely.
It could be designing a workout. So these guys are on some workout challenge. I tried to jump into it today, just not part of their challenge, but do it on my own. And it'll be about 4 or 5 days before I can walk normally with my legs. These guys are doing a Murphy workout challenge.
Uh-huh.
So this challenge is run a mile. Now they're doing it slightly differently than
once.
I learned it. So
it was over 10 days.
Right. So you try this one, and you wouldn't be walking right for a month. Run a mile, 100 pull-ups, 200 push-ups, 300 air squats, and then run another mile and do it for time, the best time you can get to through that whole sequence. Well, I tried it today, and I couldn't quite finish the 100 pull-ups. I quit at 68 and changed over to some sit-ups to get to the end of it, because otherwise I was going to be there all night. But the last mile after you do 300 air squats, trying to run a mile right after that is an absolute killer. So Vinny might be over there doctoring up some new workout plan just because he can chuckle at the inability of me or AJ or anybody else to keep up with him.
Remember at the draft when Casey Mittelstadt went viral because he couldn't do a pull-up at the combine?
Yes.
And a couple weeks later I was in Nashville, and I was sitting down with him, and like I think it was Heischer and Patrick and those guys. I think that was the same draft. I was at the Vanderbilt Marriott, and I was talking to Casey Mittelstadt, and I almost gave the joke, like, don't worry, I can't do a pull-up either. And I didn't think he'd find it funny, so I didn't say it. But
when was the last time you did a pull-up?
Please. I don't even know if I could do it in middle school. A pull-up? Do you know what would happen to my arm sockets if I did a pull-up?
How about a push-up?
It would come right out. Push-up I did once about 10 years ago, and that didn't work out well either. Right. Actually, you know what? About 7 or 8 years ago, I hired a personal trainer, and I did a lot of that type of stuff, and I actually got myself in pretty good shape, and then, of course, stopped. So,
Vinny's got some time over there on his computer right now, so I'll get him to diagram something for you.
Hey, you know that incredible analytical model that you always say that Vinny and AJ put together, and it makes them so brilliant, Ardonkily? What happened this year to their analytics? Is it proven that analytics are baloney? Because their team is freaking atrocious.
It is atrocious, and I'm not sure. We're going to have to question it a little bit. We'll see, because anybody except Edmonton can ride when they get good fortune and get the number one overall pick, which those guys did happen to be the year Austin Matthews was coming out in the draft. And they had a good first free agent auction. Good for them. They rode it to some success. They haven't won the last couple of years. Somebody else in our house has won the last couple titles, but now it's time for them to rebuild. It's a challenge for them. We'll see. They've been talking a lot of smack for the first 5 years in Donkey League history. We'll see what happens now.
Let's go to Twitter questions. Joel asks, can you clarify how teams save cap hit money when a player on a one-way contract clears waivers and is reassigned to the AHL? Well, if you send somebody down below a certain amount of money, you can clear all of it. But if they're making more than a certain amount of money, you could only bury part of it. And so in the case of Victor Raskus, who makes $4 million, you can only bury what is the league minimum salary plus an extra, I believe, $375,000. So that comes to $1.125 million. And that's what all the Wild cap hit that they would be able to clear. The rest, and the reason why they do this is because then you'd be putting NHL guys on waivers all the time, high expensive ones like the Rangers used to do with like guys like Wade Redden, and get out of their complete cap hit. So they came up with this rule to keep people from burying players in the minors. But you do get a little cap relief and things like that. Ben asks, since everyone wants center depth, any chance anyone claims Rask? I think that you know, my belief is, and we talked about this earlier, Anthony, is that if you have interest in Rask, you'd sooner let him go through waivers, call Bill Guerin up the next day and say, all right, we'll take him, but you got to take half his salary. That would be a more inexpensive way of doing it. And maybe you can also get them to take a contract back or, you know, something like that.
Yeah, I don't think there's I got to believe there's almost no chance somebody claims Victor Rask straight up and grabs that contract.
Yeah, I would agree. Somebody brought up, I thought this was funny. Somebody brought up, Vancouver to me. And I'm like, you do know who the coach is of the Vancouver Canucks, right? Like, I don't know. It's just, I don't know. Sometimes people don't think like that. Who was it recently that somebody was gone recently and wondered if the Flyers would take him because Chuck Fletcher and Brent Flair had that guy. And I'm like, no, they won't, because Chuck Fletcher and Brent Flair had that guy. Like, you know, I can't remember what it was. Ben asks, if the Wild are projecting getting a comp pick, a compensatory pick, rather than signing Philip Johansson, does that help? In addition to their current depth, their willingness to part with a number one and a trade for center help, knowing they'll get another second for JB to work his magic, JB being Judd Brackett. I mean, that's something, but I don't think one has to do with the other. If they want to trade a first-round pick, it's not because they're getting that compensatory pick. You know, but as you and I have talked about before, Anthony, I personally think with all these great prospects they have in the organization and coming, you know, I do think this is the year to go for it. And that if you're getting a rental like a Hurdle or even a Giroux, at a minimum, it's going to cost a first round pick. And I do think that you're willing to do it this year.
Yeah, I think it's going to take more than a first round pick.
Oh, 100%, I think it's going to take. It'll take at least that.
A couple assets for sure. But you're right. They might have enough right now. Enough guys that seem like they're on the verge of being NHL ready, if they're not already. And that's new territory for this club for the last few years anyway. I mean, it's been a long time since the Wild were looking at guys, and I'll include Duhaime in this, even though he's been with the Wild all season long. But you look at the guys like he and Rossi and Boldy and Beckman. I mean, these guys are the defensemen that were all set to play in the World Juniors. I mean, I think this is a team that right now has quickly restocked
And there are a lot of other prospects that you could maybe move, you know, the Jack McBains and Murat Huzadinovs and all that stuff. How about that guy, by the way? So the World Juniors get canceled and he's flying back with the Team Russia. They get to the airport in Calgary and they're smoking, allegedly, reportedly, smoking cigarettes in the back, not wearing masks. They're basically pulled off the flight. And then they get
back to Russia,
and they're on an Aeroflot flight, none of them wearing masks, and Huzadinov takes a photo of them all posing in the back of his plane, which to me was like a intended to be a slap in the face of the Canadian government, essentially, and the police in Alberta to pull him off. I mean, that is not a good look, in my opinion, on Huzadinov's part to put that picture out there on Instagram, right after he signs an extra 2 years in Russia, by the way. Anyway.
Well, I mean, I think it's hard to fault one guy for it. I mean, that's a whole team.
No, but I mean, for him to put that on social media, I just thought was a pretty cocky move.
There were a couple people who asked via Twitter about Jesper Wallstedt, and I think that becomes an interesting conversation, like how quickly Minnesota wants to move with him, and especially, I mean, I don't think there's any chance that they make a move with him and throw him into the National Hockey League now. But I mean,
they are definitely going to try to sign him after the season and bring him over here. And then, you know, I think it's probably too early to put him in the NHL, but he'll be in Iowa last year.
He looked great in the World Juniors
I think that if Bill Guerin is not willing to put a forward or a defenseman at a young age in the NHL, I'd be shocked if he's putting a 19-year-old goalie in the NHL next year. But to bring him over here,
there's any ways. But I do think I would be surprised if they didn't make every effort to get him signed and get him over to North America.
Yeah. Here's a good question, Dirty Dan asks: if you believe in jinxing players, meaning me, we know you don't. Do you warn them you're planning on taking them out of games before you write about them?
Well, I mean, it's so ridiculous. Do we really think? I mean,
according to my mom, I'm getting slaughtered on all my articles by people that are being real that I ruined this team.
Right. So, I mean, I know that.
Stick up for me, Anthony. Now I agree with you. Jinxes aren't real. Right. I don't do this.
Well, I was just going to say that I know that you believe that you have some tremendous power of the pen and all this stuff. But the words that you write have nothing to do with what a player is about to do. And so you could. Let's go back. I mean, we could go back and look at all the features that you've written. Yes, it was bad luck.
50% got hurt in the next game.
You think 50%? I'll say it was probably lower than 50%. But you go back and look. I'll tell you what. If it's 50%, I'll even accept the fact that maybe there is something to, you know, I'll call it negative karma instead of a jinx. But, I mean, like, people always say that, you know, when we're calling the game and you mention that a power play has been on a roll or something, and then all of a sudden they go 0-for-5 and, LaPanta jinxed them. I mean, we've also mentioned it the five games in a row prior to that the power play has been good and it continues to be good, or that the penalty kill has been 10 out of 10 or 12 out of 13 and 15 out of 16, and then all of a sudden that streak finally comes. Well, yes, at some point the streak's going to end. I mean, if a guy, we talk about a goalie, hasn't given up a goal in X number of minutes, well, eventually he is going to give up a goal. There's no question. But we've also mentioned it six other times during the streak where then he made the next save. So, I mean, you can find it if you want, if you're looking for it. But the reality is we all know that nothing that I say has an impact over what this team does on the ice in the next 30 seconds. And nothing that you write has the power to have a guy get injured.
It is amazing, though, like that story that I did write, like what has happened to this team since? I mean, who would have thought that COVID would have... When I wrote that story in San Jose, which is kind of ironic because remember the last time we were in San Jose was when the right before
right
the
when COVID
ended,
hit. Yeah.
And none of us knew that a couple days later that the season would come to an end. But it is, it really is amazing just how the schedule has all... It's not even just the injuries, right? I mean, the schedule has just wreaked havoc on with this team. I'm looking for this thing. I'm trying to find this article that I wrote once. I can't remember. We were in Tampa. I wrote this notebook, and this is one of those reasons why I love not being at a newspaper anymore, because we used to have to write these pre-game notebooks, and a lot of things could change in the game that would make you have to rewrite them late, and it would then wreak havoc on your game story that you had to file the second it was over to get it on the online, on like that. And we were in Tampa once. It was late October, and Matt Cook had been so disciplined that entire first month of the season. And I talked to him in that morning, and he said, "Yeah, you know, after the playoffs last year and getting the kneeing penalty on Tyson Berry and getting the 7-game suspension, I'm really going to try to be like super, super disciplined and all this type of stuff." And so I write this whole notebook lead about how disciplined he's been the first month of the season, and he's like doing all this stuff to, you know, watch his shifts over again to make sure that he didn't get in trouble with the referees and all this stuff. And then we're in the third period in Tampa, and he takes like a major penalty that like turns the game around. And I'm like, motherfucker. And I had to like rewrite this entire notebook on deadline while trying to rewrite the game story. And it was just a nightmare. So another example of where
there are times where things don't really like work. And even that one, I'd even go like take that one a hair in your direction, because you had talked directly to Matt Cook that morning. So sometimes, all right, well, maybe there's little something that's like on a guy's mind if he knows it's been talked to him about or whatever. I mean, we had something similar to that last year. We were talking about Marcus Foligno, and he had like the ratio of hits to penalty minutes. His was like third best in the league, because he was a physical player, but yet not taking penalties. And I can't remember what the point in the season was. So this was 2 years ago, because it was when we still had locker room access. And I remember talking to him about it in the morning. And I asked him about it, and he kind of looked at me. And so I showed him the stat. I think he was third in the league. At that time, he had like 6 penalty minutes or something all year. Well, that night he ended up getting like, got in a fight, got a misconduct and a minor. I think he ended up with like 17 or 19 minutes in penalties that night. Mm-hmm. And I saw him as I was getting on the plane to wherever we were flying next. And I walked by him, and he said, "Hey, let's not talk about penalty minutes tomorrow morning before the game," or something like that. And it made me laugh, but I was like, you know, I don't think like it was anything like, "Oh yeah, I just found out like I never get penalized, so I'm free reign to do whatever I want." But there are some times where like you have where there's actually words that are exchanged where it, you know, a guy's aware of it. But a lot of the times,
time that I looked Nicholas Backstrom in the eyes and he gave up 7 goals in Colorado. Don't you think that I jinxed him?
No, I don't. But like, no, I absolutely don't.
I think I did. Another good one that just popped in my head is I was talking to Ryan O'Reilly in the Colorado locker room once about how it was possible to play as many minutes as he did without ever taking a penalty, and he took a hooking minor against the Wild that game for like his first penalty minute, like honestly, like 50 games. It was like crazy how few games. And I've got to think that Ryan O'Reilly, as he was sitting in the box, is like, "That stupid sports writer that came up to me before the game." Here's a funny one from Connor. So is it safe to say that in all of this aftermath in the wake of the Winter Classic is due to an unvaccinated Kirk Cousins? I just think it's funny because so many people are like blaming the world on Kirk Cousins. You know what is funny about that, though? Like, people were like all upset at the sports writers that trashed Kirk Cousins for testing positive and being out of that game. But the point that they were all making also is that if he was, because of the protocol change in the NFL, if he had been vaccinated, they wouldn't have even tested him. So that was the point of him, of all the writers there. But the joke there is that all the writers have, you know, gone after him hard, yeah. You know, and
well,
vaccinated.
And I mean,
people,
you know, we don't have
too.
To get into what's happening in the NFL, but there's just so many things. There's so many other issues with it that are beyond a positive test this week.
Justin Mickelson asks, why do the Wild struggle with the St. Louis Blues the way they do? It is true. It's been a while now.
Yeah, the Blues are 11-1-2 in the last 14 head-to-head between the teams. And I think there's some similarities to the way the teams play the game. I think they're both physical, but yet not like knock you through the wall kind of physical, just a hard-nosed, heavy kind of game. And the Blues played it better than the Wild most of last season when they saw him. Mm-hmm. And now again, last year was a little bit of timing. If you remember, the Wild played him 8 times last year, but all 8 were late in the year when the Blues were really coming on, and earlier in the year they had been struggling. And, you know, that's, I think the Wild caught him this time at a point where they're playing pretty good hockey right now. And I like the way the Blues play. And, you know, I think one of our fans asked us at the last podcast at Tuttle's about the two GMs and the two coaching staffs, and there's a similarity between them mm-hmm. in what they demand of their players, what they value in their players. And, you know, I don't think they're all dissimilar. And I just think the Blues have just done it better than the Wild when they've played them head to head.
Yep. One last question. Daniel asked, any word on the Sturm contract extension? I have not asked about that lately, but I'll do some digging and see if there's anything new there. And by the way, it's after January 1st, so technically the Wild can extend the contract of Alex Goligoski now. I'm not sure if there's been conversations there yet, but I would expect that if the Wild do re-sign or extend the contract of Alex Goligoski, it would be about half the price of his $5 million. They just did that to get him under contract because they couldn't give him 2 years at 3.5 based on their cap squeeze in the next couple of years. One other little tidbit I'm hearing is that Alex Stalock is going to start next week, making a comeback with the Edmonton Oilers, probably go to Bakersfield for a little bit, and then eventually go to Edmonton. And, you know, one thing that just popped in my head is if this Talbot injury is long-term, if you're Billy Guerin, do you let him make that comeback with Edmonton, see if he can get himself going and then actually try
Does
to
Edmonton
reacquire
let him?
Him
out right now with how poorly Mikko Koskinen is playing?
Yeah.
Holy cow, crap. Has he been bad.
How about Dave Tippett, who just went into COVID protocol today, just going after the goaltender yesterday?
That's why I'm saying I'm not sure they're going to be anxious to move a goaltender right now.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, no wonder they're begging Alex Stalock to probably come back. So thank goodness that Alex is healthy after his dealings with his heart condition that he's had here the last couple of years. Fun podcast as always. I'm going to start to play with Phil here. We'll
update you on Vinny putting together a workout for Michael Russo that we'll give you on next week's show.
How about Lunani, by the way, I just missed a call from him. He does that narration where he's like, here in Minnesota, we don't leave when it gets cold and blah, blah, blah. And today's in Hawaii. Like, he probably got on that plane the second that he was done with that narration. The guy lives in Florida half the year because he hates the cold, and he does the narration.
The narration was good, though.
It was very good, but I don't think that he wrote it. Let's put it that way. Because he contradicted himself with with just the way that he conducts himself in real life as he's calling me from Honolulu right now, or at Maui, actually. Thanks, as always, for everybody for listening. January 13th is our next live show at Tuttle's. I'm going to give Stanley and Phil some lamb lung right now. They love lamb lung for some reason. Thanks to Chris Lindahl Real Estate. Thanks to Aquarius Home Services, your local authorized dealer of Connecticut water treatments. Thanks to Bosch Law Firm, Tria, Profile by Sanford, Minnesota Propane Association, and Kowalski's. Talk to you next week, everybody. So much coming out, there's nothing going in. I know that you feel like you're never going to win. Oh, but the world won't forgive a winner. Pull up. Do you know what would happen to my arm sockets if I did a pull up? They would come right out. Push up I did once about 10 years ago, and that didn't work out well either.